every wedding includes an exchange of vows meant to solidify one person's commitment to another, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish as long as we both shall live. Now, all the words are always heartfelt, yet the true definition of those words is revealed in the life circumstances that follow. Today, we start a new series on love and marriage and relationships titled For Better or For Worse. Next week, I'm going to preach on what it means to love and to cherish one another. The week after that, Bill Haslam is going to preach. You do not want to miss it. He's preaching on dating. If you are single, if you are not yet married, you definitely don't want to miss it. If you want to be married, and 94% of people, statistics say, will be married at some point, you don't want to miss it. If you're a parent of a teenager or a young adult, you want to watch and invite your friends to watch. If you are a teenager or a young adult, you want to watch. Well, today, you're in for a treat because I'm sitting down for an interview with Ryan and Jess Suzuki. And the reason their story is going to be in this series is weeks ago when I was thinking and planning through this series, the Lord put it in my heart saying their story must be in this series. You know Ryan, he's an associate pastor here at CPC. He oversees children's ministries and our communications and our assimilation ministries. That's how to get connected and find a place to serve. And he preaches and teaches sometimes as well. And you might know Jess. She's a full-time mom. She's a part-time office manager, ironically, at my wife's chiropractic office. She's also a local legend as a Zumba instructor. And your kids might know who she is because she's been up here leading on stage at kids' camp. Ryan and Jess have been married for 12 years. They have two incredible kids, Mason and Cammie, who both go to SRVCA here at CPC. You've heard the phrase, when it rains, it pours. And in 2020, that was a year that for many of us, it rained and it pours. It's also true for Ryan and Jess. In some ways, last year was amazing. In some ways, it was heartbreaking. And in many ways, it was challenging. I wanted you to hear their story because it doesn't end with a bow, but it does end with hope. And with all that's going on in today's world and this community, I feel like their story is more relevant than ever and more hopeful than ever. So I believe you will appreciate their incredible transparency and their rare vulnerability. So here is my conversation with Ryan and Jess Suzuki. Ryan and Jess, thank you for joining me here. Thanks for sharing your story. Let's just dive right in. Let's go back to when you were first married, when you were newlyweds. Mm-hmm. Some people think newlyweds is like the first few months. Technically, you're newlyweds for 2 years. So let's just look at the first 2 years of your marriage. Any big lessons, any takeaways? What was that like?
I thought we were getting divorced every day for 2 years. my family, I came from a background of my parents never fought about anything. I mean, I had a blissful childhood. And so when we started, I wouldn't even consider it now after 12 years fighting at all. I would end up in tears like, you're gonna leave me, I'm the worst. Like, this is like not working out. And he had a totally different experience than I did.
My parents, without throwing them under the bus, my parents have a healthy amount of conflict that, you know, I got to witness.
That is very diplomatic.
Yes. and so for me, you know, Jess never actually expressed, it was years before she told me that she thought maybe I would divorce her. But for me, you know, where Jess is struggling with, oh my gosh, we're fighting all the time. For me, I was thinking, I never fight with Jess. This is amazing. Oh my gosh. It's like, it's bliss. It's utter peace. So that's how it was.
So how'd you work through that?
Well, I just think like through time and patience, and I think security, the longer you're married, the more you're like, oh, this is just being in a relationship. And mind you, we got married. I was 21. Like,
okay.
And now as a parent, we have like a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. And I think of like, if any of them came to me and like, I'm getting married at 21, and I'd be like, oh my, that's so young. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of growing up just as an adult that was happening like within the first couple of years of marriage. And then shortly after those 2 years, like I was pregnant and we were going to be parents. Right. So that just like threw you in the deep end. And it was kind of like, hope you can swim. Like, it's going to be wild.
So now you're 7 years into your marriage. Mm-hmm.
and something significant happened that like rattled your cages, and you all of a sudden were dealing with something that you had never dealt with before, and quite frankly, you thought you never would have to deal with it. Yeah. And so what happened?
So for me, it was really centered on my family. So 5 years ago, kind of like I talked about, I had an idyllic childhood. I could not, it's hard to even express looking back on it. Like just my parents were in love. It was great. I have an older brother. I have a younger sister. We're all 2 years apart. I mean, I have a great family. And 5 years ago, it became apparent that my parents were separating. And the devastation that followed was unlike anything I've ever experienced, because they've never fought, and because like the assumption that everything has always been great, it rattled me in a significant way. And it was heart-wrenching for a long time. And so the next 6 to 8 months after that, my parents had formally separated. And mind you, at this point, we have two young kids. Like I'm 30 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm balancing feelings of it being a child, but also being responsible in raising children. And right. It was a hard emotional balance to consider.
Being a child and a parent.
Yes. And then miraculously got to experience God's reconciliation of my parents. So after those 8 months of separation, there was...
Can I ask a direct question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why did they get separated?
The long and short of it and very complicated version of it, there was a violation of trust between my parents, which caused them to separate. And then we got to see God's reconciliation of bringing them back together. They had gone to counseling. My interpretation of that time was like, God is so good. Like he can do anything.
Some forgiveness.
Forgiveness. Healing. Like really just love is real, you know? And then about a year and a half after, sin is still sin and Satan is alive and well. And yes. The thing that broke them up became a real final ending of their marriage, where one of my parents chose just to be done. And that happened in August of 2019. Mm-hmm. And so we spent...
So that's about a year.
Yeah. So unfortunately, as we entered in the COVID year, divorce is very hard to come by. So we're still... in this weird limbo of they're definitely getting divorced. It just hasn't been finalized yet.
So let me ask you this. Is there a difference between like your initial emotional devastation of, oh my gosh, like my parents after 37 years mm-hmm. are separated, like violation of trust, like what is happening right here? And then kind of like the final of it's over.
Yeah.
Like one is choosing to leave mm-hmm. and... What's the difference between, is there a difference there? And is it related? Is it grief? Is there something about the final end? Yeah. Walk me through that.
Initially, like when they first separated that, and I'm sure anyone who's gone through something hard can kind of identify this feeling of like, I felt like I was rotting from the inside out. Like I was truly sick with like not understanding that sin, not understanding how they got there, just questioning everything, looking back on my childhood, going like, did I interpret all this incorrectly? Like questioning really everything. When they reconciled, there was, you know, something really beautiful that happened for a short period of time. And then when it became final, it was that real grief that set in that like, this will never be okay. Like this will always now be a different framework of my life moving forward. And as now, like we've said, an adult, but still raising children, realizing like, this has not only changed the blueprint of our marriage and our family, but you know, I have kids involved now. I had to explain the real final aspect of this to my son, which was
right.
heartbreaking. And then all the firsts that come after that, the right. first holiday that mm-hmm. you have to split up, the first time you have to go to your other parents' home.
All and they're trying to figure it out and they're asking why.
Right.
And what's going on? And you're having to answer your parents.
And we've said this from the get-go. You know, there's six, almost seven grandkids on my side of the family. So all of my siblings and I, we all have children. And we told Mason, who's the oldest, who has the most framework of my parents being together, We've said from the start, nothing of this scenario, A, had to do with you, but B, like, there's no secrets here.
Right.
So what I'm telling you right now, that there was a violation of trust, and those are all things we've communicated to our son. Like, trust was broken between them, and he's like, immediately, I'm sure everyone's mind goes like, well, what? Yeah. I want to know what he did.
Right.
Or I want to know what they did. I want to know what she did. Like, how do you get there? And we're like, listen, all of that information is going to be for you in a time that makes sense for you.
Mm-hmm.
Being 7, 8 years old, that's not the time right now.
Yeah. You know? Some great modeling for people who are listening right now. Also, I can just imagine how hard that would be. You mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you alluded to how it would affect your own relationship, your own marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mentioned in messages in the past around here, this phrase that sin splashes.
Yeah.
And a lot of time sin splashes, most cases, on the people you love the most, on the people that you're closest to. And in this case, a violation of trust in one relationship, and this is very common among any person, it causes you to struggle to trust other people.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, it's like it struggles you to trust in any or all relationships. Specifically as it relates to your marriage, how did that, what happened with your parents, affect your ability to trust even Ryan?
Yeah, I think he was able to be there for me in a way where it's like, I understand why you're feeling these things. But there was really raw moments where I fully looked and said to him, I don't know why people get married. And I don't know why you take vows if you can't keep them. And I remember looking at him going like, you and I both know you can't promise like 100% that this won't happen to you and I.
Right.
And that's hard because, you know, when you think about, you know, being married to Bridget and your vows that you took there, like,
yeah, what happened to for better or for worse? What happened to
you? Mean those. And I meant those
as long as we both shall live.
Yeah. I meant those I meant those as much as one could at 21. I meant those, but then my parents did too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then just something down the line, one of them didn't.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, how do you get there?
So what did you do when you found yourself struggling in ways that you weren't even volunteering to do it? It was almost involuntary response. You were struggling to trust Ryan. First of all, what did that look like?
Oh, I think I went through like all the stereotypical things of like I looked through emails. I was like,
you read his emails.
Oh yeah. I was on Find My Friends. I said like, and I would call him like, why are
Find
you
My
at
Friends, like Life 360.
Yeah.
Like
why are you at the Safeway? Like, okay. And he's like, I'm driving past a Safeway. You know what I mean? And he was so calm about it and was never insecure about it, which provided such stability. And he looked at me and it was like, I have nothing to hide. And there was a comfort there where it was like, not only do I have nothing to hide, it is all open for you. And I don't know if he intentionally does this, but sometimes I feel like he leaves those things open. And he's like, just like, try it. Like,
what? Let me ask you this, Ryan. What made you so confident that what Jess was working through and struggling through actually had nothing to do with you?
Well, I feel like it's kind of part of the nature of our relationship. Just thinking about it as you're talking is, you know, I can be a pretty insecure person about how people feel about me, but I'm not insecure about how Jess feels about me. She makes it very clear how much she cares about me and how much she trusts me. And just knowing this thing, like when you're walking alongside someone and you see this thing, I mean, her life, kind of her understanding of her childhood was all tossed up in the air, right? Mm-hmm. So it's all these things that you thought were true and now they're not true. And I just knew, that's not me. I didn't do that. I wasn't part of her childhood. I wasn't in those things. I knew that whatever the lack of trust, I wanted her, you know, I encouraged her, like, go ahead and look. Go ahead and, like, find it. Like,
yeah, look through my emails.
Call me up and ask me where I am. Like, do those things because I want to demonstrate to you more clearly how you can trust me, why you can trust me. And so for me, it was more of an opportunity. It was an opportunity because
I don't know that every husband would look at it like that.
Yeah,
honestly.
Maybe. And I just feel like it feels empowering to me because at the end of the day, she's rebuilding the sense of trust. Not that trust has been broken between us. She needs to feel trust. Yes. And that was an opportunity to feel more trust. I feel like how I kind of interpret it now is I think she trusts me more because I was more open.
Well, Should we ask her?
Yeah, you can go ahead and ask her.
This is true.
Just do you trust Ryan now?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the coolest thing that I think he did alongside just being like, look through my emails, girl, I got nothing to hide. Like, this yeah, is like a what, safe.
What helped you turn the corner
so
over time?
January 1, 2020, I get a post-it on our bathroom, like the only bathroom we have, the mirror. Yeah. And it said, this is your year. And I think it's funny because it's like, who knew that COVID and all this was going to happen the fall, you know,
through
this
year. That's all it said.
It said, this is your year. And I'm like, you know what? It is my year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's right.
August through December, like living through the real final moments of, you know, my parents being not together, the first holidays we've had to divide things up, and come January 1, someone being like, I've seen the last 3 months and like, this is your year. I thought it was like, you know, it's January 1, we all make resolutions and I'm feeling great. And then January 2, there's like another note on there. And I'm like, wow, this is cool. And he goes a week and I get a post-it every week.
A post-it, a love note. Like, you don't seem like, are you a love, do you write love letters? Like,
well, I always find this thing consistent?
I've known you for a long time. Yeah. And yet,
I like to say he's not a romantic. He's like a realist. And okay. I think that's why these notes are really so special.
Well, I mean, I love to love Jess. I love to make her feel good. I like to build her up, which she's feeling good. She is the fun one in our relationship. So if she's feeling good, I'm feeling good, inevitably. I mean, she's just going to lift me
wife,
up.
Happy wife, happy life. Yes. Are you kidding me?
And she's just, preach. She drives that stuff around. So it's amazing. And I like to do that. I like to do that. But I know that she loves getting a note. Whenever I wrote her something, she'd love it.
She lit up.
Yeah. But I found it difficult to find a way to do it that felt good, authentic to me. And
doable.
Yeah, like right.
A one sentence on a
not,
post-it.
I mean, sometimes not even a sentence.
Okay, a thought.
A thought. Yeah. Yeah. And I just wanted to, and sometimes like Jess will be, I think Jess is amazing. Yeah. And I think, you know, as often happens, we don't think about ourselves necessarily the way other people feel about us. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I want to drive this home.
Yeah. So 1 week.
Day. Yeah.
So 1 week. You're 1 week in. And how did that make you feel at first?
I came in with like the seventh note and I was like, this has got to stop. You know what I mean?
Stop.
Well, because I think, and everyone can relate.
So you resisted.
Of course, because it's so vulnerable. Because what I was feeling was like, this feels good. I know he wants, and it's being seen in a way like he knows I've been through hard times. In a way, I knew that he knew I needed it. Mm-hmm. And I am a spicy Latina woman, didn't want to admit that I needed it. Mm-hmm. And it caused me, and we all feel this, you don't want to feel like you burden someone with your mess. And I felt like, don't be obliged to do this for me because you know I'm a mess.
Wow.
And he kind of was like, you can say what you want, but I like, and I knew, and for those who know Ryan well, like when the man's wheels are spinning, there's nothing that I will say or do to stop.
To deter. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a creature of habit.
You're a creature,
of habit.
You are. I know you to be that.
The pile
grew.
Yeah. So in the year of 2020, I got 365 notes that year.
You got a love note every day for an entire, okay.
Well, and the love notes travel. And the love notes travel. Like if I'm in a different place, if we're, you know, we went to visit my mom, you know, there it is on her bathroom window.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay. That's both convicting to every man watching, but also inspiring. I just have to admit that. But let's back up as those love notes started to pile up. Mm-hmm. Is there a connection? Was there a connection between those notes and rebuilding trust? And if so, what was it?
Yeah. What I was starting to feel, like I said earlier, I needed those notes, and the things that I was feeling in regards to my parents' marriage was, you know, I had a parent leave. And as much as I'm a fully formed adult, there are moments in that experience where, you know, you're looking at a parent who does love you and I love them. And I'm saying, choose me, love me, stay with, like, don't leave us. Mm-hmm. And what those notes were doing was really, we like an extension of Christ coming through Ryan going like, God seeing me and being like, I've given you someone who every day is choosing you, to love you, to pursue you, who sees you, who, like, in your mess and in your pain, that that doesn't deter him, and he's not going anywhere, and built me, and I say this candidly because it's true, you know, in the simplest way, my heart was completely shattered.
Yeah.
And note by note, he rebuilt the framework of, like, my heart now.
Yeah.
And there are no real words other than, like, completely overwhelming feeling of being loved so clearly by, like, right, another human on this earth.
Yeah.
I told him, at the end of 2020, I was like, I can't explain how much that meant to mm-hmm. me to be loved by you that way.
Yeah. It's also an incredible picture of the gospel. Like,
yeah,
someone doing something that every day reinforces, like, I see you, I choose you, I love you. It reminds me of Ephesians 1:4, for he, this is Jesus, for he chose us mm-hmm. in him before the creation of the world. Like, how foundational is that to our identity? So let me ask you this, Jess. You have a parent who violates trust multiple times, chooses yeah. to leave the family.
Yeah.
How did that affect your relationship with God?
It's hard, like, to explain, because there's a parental figure, earthly parental figure, that breaks trust, and that you don't really understand, like, the context of that parental child relationship. Yeah. And, you know, I've been a Christian my whole life. That same relationship exists with, like, our Heavenly Father. I had to revert back, and this is, like, going way back in just my personal testimony of when I was 5 years old, I was diagnosed with an illness that lasted for a decade. And that decade was extremely hard in, like, formative years of my life. You know, mm-hmm. we're talking 8 and 10 and 12 mm-hmm. and 13 and 14 years old, and then it finally cured at 15. And the thing that I look back on that time that God taught me is, like, don't you trust me? Like, I've healed you. Like, yeah. truly. Like, there was no magic surgery, whatever. Like, my body was healed through, like, God's provision in my physical body, 100%. So when this comes up again in a relationship with a parent or a hard time in our family, or I even think, like, we lost, you know, I miscarried between Mason and Cammie. When those things come up, I go back to those 10 years of feeling like, where I was giving to God, like, my anger and my frustration and my lack of understanding. And God continues to show up, like, don't you see me? Right. Don't you see that I have this and I'm writing this, and I've healed you, you know, when you were 15, I brought you a child after a miscarriage. Right. Like, yes, your parents aren't together, but I will provide in the context of your relationship.
I'm faithful.
And it's building that. So, of course, those anger, confusion things come up again with, you know, my parents no longer being together.
Now,
yeah,
if you fast forward a little bit and basically thank God for the healing that he has brought, you're very open about the amount of peace mm-hmm. that you feel right now, but that doesn't really mean the problems are all gone, right?
No. Yeah. There's peace in knowing that, like, God has authored this story long before I was in the picture, long before, you know, when they took, like, God knew this when they took vows. Do you know what I mean? None of this surprises the God of the universe. Mm-hmm. And there's a peace knowing that, like, although I have to live it, it's really God's story to tell. Right. And I'm just walking through phases of it.
Well, I'm super grateful, for one, at just your willingness to tell it with such transparency and vulnerability. In our conversations, Jess, one of the things that you said is you likened your relationship or your marriage to Ryan, like, together you're like a ship, and you're the engine on the ship, like, you make it go.
Yeah.
But Ryan's the anchor
of
the ship and of the relationship and your family and that sort of thing. So if you look back to last year, and transitioning a little bit to you here, Ryan, you had something that you struggled with that you did not see coming. So this is all in the same year. Like, you've got Jess's family kind of, like, breakdown in your extended family, dealing with all of that, the trust issues, and then you're struggling with something you didn't really see coming, but there were some signs, and plus COVID, plus all these other things. Like, what was it, and what were the signs?
Yeah, I can struggle in my life with anxiety. You know, I talked about even my confidence or all those things, but anxiety, I'm an anxious person. I like things just a certain way. And 2020 was certainly a year where you didn't get that. You know, you didn't get stability. You didn't get normal. Right. You didn't get what you expected. You didn't get any of those things. And it has grown. I mean, that's always been part of my life. That's always there, and that's fine. Sometimes it's fine. It's workable. It's good. But in the last 5 years, I mean, things like what's happening with Jess and her family, you know, it's one thing to be an anchor and just to be stable and to help rebuild trust. It's not, it's just happening. Like, you hate to see people you love go through something that hard. Mm-hmm. It's heart wrenching, and you want to,
and it has an effect on you.
Yeah, of course. Well, yeah. Cause I want to be there. I want to help, but there's only so much you can do. You know what I mean? There's no real fixing that one. And even in the last, you know, I had, God gave me the privilege of having all four of my grandparents until into my 30s. Mm-hmm. And in the last 5 years, I've lost three of the four of them. Wow. And one just this last summer.
So a lot of loss.
A lot of loss. Yeah. And even at work, I mean, for me, being a pastor, working in ministry, there's a lot of times where I might put too much weight and emphasis and I get too much of what makes me go out of performing or doing it well. And this year, I mean, as you might imagine, as you know, mm-hmm. You're making a lot of which decision is the least bad decision. And that's just not, there's not the fun in that.
Mm-hmm. So at what point did you realize you needed to address this growing sense of anxiety as all these triggers were kind of going off or being pulled? Like, what were you experiencing?
Yeah, I was with some people and I just thought, like, this is right after my grandfather had died. My grandmother is in her mid-90s. And, you know, I need to be there for them. And I'm on this trip and there's more people there than I feel great about. And so I'm like, you know what? I just need to call Jess. I should just get out and I'll feel better about it. And I felt, actually, she picked me up. I felt great. You know, I felt good. I felt like I made a good decision. This is great. And we're in the car on the way home. And Jess is, we're just talking about, like, hey, she's asking me, how should we manage, like, the COVID relationships between, like, family and friends? Like, how should we do that? And she, no pressure from her. She's just asking. She wants to know my opinion and what I think.
I kind of wanted, like, a sense of, like, I saw that he was on a maybe different page than I was. And I just, like, as a team, wanted to make sure really, like, I'm comfortable doing what he's. And I knew that, like, this was really a decision he needed to make in terms of, and I was willing to meet him where he was at.
Yeah, Jess has accepted that I'm the way more uptight one. So she's asking me these questions. And it was, as she's asking, I just felt, I can kind of identify, like, this moment where it's just, something inside of me just broke, like a dam broke, or, you know, it was a straw that broke the camel's back. And I just told her, I'm like, I can't make these decisions anymore. I can't decide. You know, it's when you're making decisions in this time, like, especially with COVID, everything has this extra weight, every decision. There's nothing that you don't think about in the back of your mind, like going to the grocery store, whatever.
Yep.
And I told her, I can't think about this anymore. I can't talk about this anymore. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry. I can't. Like, and I was just kind of quiet for the rest of the ride home, driving us home. Mm-hmm. I got home. I went to my bed and to our room. And I didn't get out of bed basically for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like I've told you, you know, I've struggled with anxiety. I have melancholy. I can have bouts of melancholy, but usually something happens. I have something hard, something bad. I go to bed and I'm back. You know, next day I'm good. And this time I was in bed for 2 days and I felt like I could not lift myself from that.
So that weightiness, at that point you probably realize I need to get some help.
Yeah.
Is that right? And then did you feel like you had waited a long time? Did you feel like it was just, that's when you knew? Or walk me through that moment.
I mean, I spent that weekend really just thinking, like, whoa, what is, you know, this is not good.
Mm-hmm.
I knew we were like in uncharted territory specifically with him. Cause again, his anxiousness isn't news to people who love him and know him well. Like this is just part of his DNA.
Yeah.
And I say his best friend, and Ryan is a very like introverted, very close person. So that spot is only reserved really for one person. And I remember he ignored his friend Danny's call. And I thought, okay, that's not great. And there was a level of concern and just an awareness that I knew that this is probably a more serious thing than just being anxious.
So were you resistant to get help at first? Or
I mean, I knew I needed it. There's this kind of like going back even to the family of origin. I remember telling my brother about it, and he's like, well, yeah, we're Suzukis, so that's what we do. Like, we're anxious. Mm-hmm. And but I knew that there needed to be more to be done. But yeah, it was a lot of fear there, right? So there's fear about what it says about me, right? So what does it say that I need help? What does it say about me as a pastor or just as a Christian, even as a husband, as a dad? Like, mm-hmm. Does it say I'm a fraud? Does it say that I'm not what people think about me? And that was, it was interesting because, you know, talking to my friend Danny, talking to Jess, like I knew that part of the action plan was to get counseling.
Right.
And for me, like when I think about people, Jess, I think, mentioned that she did some counseling. I think that my sense of people who get counseling is that they are brave, that they are strong, and that they are smart, that we all need help. They all need.
Yeah,
of course. But for me,
for you,
that I was weak,
right,
that I was a fraud, and that I was not being tough enough. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I needed it, but it was hard to admit it. But one of those things, like for me, like it's like the notes. Like for me, once I decide to do something, when I know that something's the right thing to do, or the good thing to do, or the best thing to do,
right,
there's pretty much nothing that's going to stop me from doing it. So right. It was just once I made that decision, I couldn't call the counseling center fast right. enough.
So you get into a counseling relationship, yeah. and it's a healthy one. And over a period of time, I'm guessing that it's a process.
Yeah.
So you probably learned some things initially. Maybe going through an extended, because now, like, not only did you enter into a counseling, you also took a leave from work here at the church, and we encouraged you to do that. And walk me through, like, what were you feeling or even learning initially in that process?
Yeah, it was interesting because I love, you know, one of the things that helped me get into the counseling thing is I love getting coaching. You know, mm-hmm. I've had an executive coach in the past, and that's really life-giving to me because I want to do things the right way. You know, I've told you this many times, like I love having a great mechanic because I just want to be able to trust someone. I love trusting an expert.
Right.
So that part was easy. But what I found was you and Kathy came to me and offered me that leave, which was hard to accept, but I took. And I remember the first week, the first few days of that, I felt when I stopped working, it was like incredible. I felt relief, but I didn't feel like the goodness of the relief, right? Mm. So, you know, I love...
So describe it.
Yeah, like if you know me, like I love when I finish something, like finishing a task feels so good to me.
Yes.
I didn't feel... I felt like I was relieved of the work, but I just felt... I felt numb. I felt a lot of nothing, which was kind of...
And that lasted how long?
It lasted... I mean, it was very intense for about 2 weeks.
Okay.
It was like it was an intense feeling of the absence of emotion, which was just kind of disturbing, right? Yeah. Like is something really wrong?
Yeah. Do you remember it lifting? If so, what was it?
I remember like Jess said, I like to be alone sometimes. So I told Jess, I'm like, I think I want to go camping by myself,
which doesn't appeal to me whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'm like, go right ahead.
So So Jess, as she often does, like she'll hear me. She knows me and she knows who I am and accepts who I am. And so she's like, you need to go do that. And so I just booked it and I went camped up on Mount Diablo. And it was quiet. There's no one else there. Kind of freaked me out a little bit, but it was,
but it was good.
It was amazing.
You felt some clarity there.
I felt peace. I felt finally kind of like the relief, like the goodness of that relief.
Mm-hmm. So if those were initial experiences, if you look back over the whole of maybe that 3 month time or looking back at it, like what were some overall lessons or takeaways?
Yeah, it's that really, it was hard to process what I learned until I came back. But I feel like what I learned and what I've experienced is how much lower the stakes are in all that I do. Now, that's not to say the stakes, like there aren't stakes, and that it's important for me to be a good dad. It's important for me to be a good husband. It's important for me to be a good pastor. But I always had that, I have that sense, that kind of innate, that thing inside me where I just think, I have to do this. I have to carry this thing. I have to bring it to a successful end or whatever it is. And a big part of my experience with God is just knowing that, like, God does desire that we do good work, that we work hard. You know, that's a pretty unique thing about what the Bible tells us about the God that we worship, is that he values work. But at the same time, like, that the Bible tells me constantly over and over again that God is actually the one that produces the result. He's the one that actually causes the fruit to bear. Mm-hmm. And so now I feel more of, I'm going to go do work and I'm going to trust God to bring the results. And that's the best I can do. And when I really am living in that, it's just a relief. The pressure is kind of off. I mean, I'm going to go do my thing. I'm going to do what God's called me to do and then trust him to do whatever he's going to do. And it takes me off the hook of making it all happen. And that's been just incredible.
Yeah. Any other like lessons from your time away?
Yeah.
Like
there was the sense of rest, you know, in the scripture, the Bible is pretty interesting in that it emphasizes rest. Yeah. Jesus rested. God rested on the seventh day. Mm-hmm. There's this idea of Sabbath, of taking time. And really that's about trusting God. Yes. While he's nurturing your spirit and providing for your needs. Mm. And my counselor, he shared this verse with me that, of course, I've read it before. It never, never impacted me, but it's Isaiah 40, 28 through 31. And it says, "Have you known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not grow faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youth shall fall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." And the thing
is so good.
It's amazing. And the thing that really struck me that my counselor, Brent, he just pointed out, he said, look right there, even youths shall faint and be weary. Mm. And he was just reminding me, it's like, hey, the Bible tells you that you're gonna get tired. You're gonna be beaten down, ground down, and God is the one that has to lift you up. So it's okay to be tired. Mm-hmm. It's okay that you need rest. It's okay to admit that,
right?
And to own that. And so for me, like in this season, it's trying to learn, how do I do that better? I mean, right. I'm a master of squirreling away all my vacation hours. Mm-hmm. I know I shouldn't do that.
Yeah,
I want to be that first person in, last person out.
Right.
But is that what's good? That's not. Who's that for? Mm-hmm. Who's that for? That's not, that's not for me. That's for me.
Yeah.
That's only serving me, making me feel better. But yeah. God's telling me like, no, you're going to grow weary. I'm going to give you strength. You got to trust me to bring some of that stuff out that you can't
really
do on your
really
own.
Really good. So when you came back to work, do you have any concerns kind of transitioning back in?
It's funny. Like about a month before it was time to be back. So I started to kind of freak out because it's hard to tell what's changing, right? Like when you start, if you're like dieting or working out, like it's just hard to tell. Is anything changing? I thought, I don't know if I've changed. I don't know if anything's different.
It's incremental.
Yeah.
And internal a lot of times.
Yeah. And it's also, I didn't have any of the pressure pushing back on me to know. Like I was afraid that I'd get back to work and I would fold under the pressure immediately and I'd just be worse than I was before.
Right.
But I remember in that last month, a couple things. We had a friend, one of our friends, told Jess, and she said, I think Ryan seems a lot lighter. He just seems like, you know, it seems like things have changed. And it's a relief sometimes to have someone come alongside you and say, hey, you look
and
different.
Observe that.
Yeah.
Notice that.
That was so empowering. And then the other part was just, again, it's that trust. It's just knowing like, well, God is doing a work, whether or not I can see it. And I just got to go and see what he's done.
Those are great takeaways. I got a question about kind of you're going into that season. Do you think, this is for the people watching right now, do you think that your initial hesitations of seeking help, getting into counseling, even taking a leave or any one of those things, do you think those hesitations are common among men? And if so, why?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Like what would you say to someone who maybe is experiencing some of the same things or could relate to what you went through and is experiencing some of the same hesitations?
Yeah, I think on the one hand, I know that we want to, I know for me, I want to tough it out. I want to bear the burden. I want to push through and I want to come out the other side stronger and better.
Right.
And a lot of times that just means just suck it up and go. For me, like, I just know, I've seen the wisdom. Like, that's not the answer. That's not what's going to work.
Right.
That's, sometimes that will be okay. Sometimes you need the support. And actually, like, and you've seen this too. We've been in ministry and seen this. I've seen the destruction of that enough times and now experienced it in my own life.
Right.
That if you try to do that and it's not working and you keep pushing, there's incredible destruction that can come from that. Mm-hmm. You can just, your life, I've seen people's lives implode because they weren't willing to just get the help that we need. I mean, that's right there.
They Isaiah burn out, they blow up. Yeah. What specifically are some lessons you've learned about the hope that we have in the gospel over the last year plus?
I was just, I'm just always reminded that idea that Jesus is going to, He's going to bring it through. I can't make it happen. He's going to make it happen. And for my life, like the gospel is that the work is done. Jesus has completed that work of salvation for my soul, for my eternity. And so that's one of those things that just, it lowers the stakes. I mean, this is so temporary. I'm replaceable in my role. If something happened to me, God's going to keep doing his thing. And he's already been faithful to me. So he's been faithful to me. He's already completed the work. He's already done all those things. And so it just grew that trust. It just expanded on what that means. And now I get to look at that and it's like, that's the goodness of the gospel.
Right.
That I don't have to work for it. I can't.
Right.
And I just get to be a part of God's work and he's going to do his thing. And he's already done the most important thing for me.
Okay. What about, I mentioned intergenerational church. So that means there's lots of people watching that are older. We've got grandparents who are parents of adult children and also have grandparents who, understandably so, could be listening to this and listening to your story and say, that is a good deal of hardship for a year, and yet you'll probably experience greater hardships still. You know, addiction, disease, death in your immediate family, a wayward teenager who completely goes off the rails. We could go on and on. Yeah. What advice would you give to people in that realm, maybe grandparents' age, about how they could love and support someone your age or in your stage of life who's going through a difficult season?
I'll put her on blast because I think what she did was like so beautiful and effortless. Karen Pierce reached out to me pretty shortly after she found out about Ryan taking time off and wrote me this beautiful handwritten letter and basically said, this is my phone number. I'm not asking you what you need or want, but I'm bringing you a meal and it's gonna, and I just love this, like, it's gonna happen.
Right.
Like, I'm gonna do this. And so here's my number, reach out to me. And I remember going like,
she initiated.
Oh, 100%.
I'm gonna figure out a way to serve you, meet a need that I know you'll have.
Yeah,
I'm not
and have I you think come up. In relating to people who are going through a hard time, I can speak for myself saying like, putting someone who's in pain and to say like, what can I do for you? Sometimes that's really hard because we don't know what we want. And it's hard to feel, to like let it all hang out there at the get-go. And so for someone to step in and be like, I don't need to know the details, but I can assume that it's hard and I want to provide for you in a real tangible way that will just alleviate a certain area. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I texted her and literally had a text version of the conversation we're having now. And I said, thank you. Yes, you can bring a meal. And then we started coordinating and she did that maybe twice, three times, you know, during his time off. And in the best part was, it was like when she dropped off and we're like inconvenient, you know, she lives out here. She came all the way to Castro Valley, dropped off the meal. It wasn't like, and I want to sit and hear about everything that's going on. It was like, no, it's just food. And it's just because I know you need it. And she was on her way. And it was kind of like this beautiful, like, blessing. And our kids looked forward to Karen meals all the time. Mason awesome. Said it was the best broccoli he's ever had.
That's awesome. So in our conversations over the last week, Ryan, one of the things you said is, if you summarized your relationship, there'd be a few words or a few principles that would summarize that. So could you share those with everybody?
Yeah. So I think, like, if I was to sum up our relationship, like how it works is we have, it's trust, transparency, and acceptance. So you may have heard some of those words come out or just that theme, but I mean, it's all about trust. Do we trust each other?
Yeah. Because you've talked so much. I mean, that has been the bedrock of this testimony of the last year plus.
And I think that's what makes, when we're trusting each other, that's what makes it so good, because that's how it works. But the way that we build trust is by being really open and honest. I mean, like I said, in our premarital, we talked about, like, where do you keep the butter, on the fridge or in the countertop? And it's all those, we had all these, like, funny, like, back and forth about that.
Because Ryan cares.
Because I care very much about those things.
Where the butter is.
And how a dishwasher is loaded. That's the most important thing. But we had those kind of silly conversations, but they laid the foundation to have all sorts of bigger conversations. So we're transparent. Like, sometimes we will call each other out if we're having a tough day as parents. But we trust where that's, like, coming from.
You need to tag out. I need to tag in.
Yeah. I'm always pleasantly surprised how little that seems to bother the other. You know, if I'm calling her out or she's calling me out, it usually does not become a fight around that. It's like, okay, like, I trust you. And then the other part, like, is that acceptance. Like, Jess accepts the fact that sometimes I like to be alone. She doesn't give me a hard time about it.
Yeah, I heard something about what your dream would be. What, you want to share that?
Yeah, my dream.
It's like, but it's not just age. Like, it's a constant state of dream.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love to kind of be able to do my own thing, but just
be completely alone.
Be alone, but Jess is in the same house. You know,
like,
Jess is
nearby.
She's nearby.
I just like I'm going to go into the ghost work. Yeah. Like, just like my presence is felt amongst the house.
Yeah, I love
just
that.
Not that I'm right next to him.
But we accept each other. There's like an acceptance. Like, I, you know, with that trust thing, when Jess is checking in on me, like making sure, it's like, I accept that's hard. It's hard for her. And it's accepting that. And she accepts that I'm an anxious person that needed help. And she accepts that. And she pushes me forward. And that's those things, like transparency and acceptance, that builds trust quickly.
Yeah.
And I believe it's just a very strong trust.
I love you. And I love you. I love each of you. I love both of you. I thank you so much on behalf of our entire church family for sharing your story. I thank you specifically for your transparency and your vulnerability. I've been praying all week that your freedom of sharing this hard season of your story would enable other people to see how God is working and trust Him to make different decisions or moves in their lives. And so thank you so much.
Wow, what a powerful story. Would you join me in a closing prayer for Jess and for Ryan and for you? Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for Ryan and for Jess, for their willingness to share their story with us. I pray your blessing over them, over their marriage and family. And I pray your blessing, Father, over our entire church family, every person who's watching right now, every age and life stage. And I ask, God, that by the power of the Holy Spirit, they would know that their identity can first and foremost be found in you, Jesus. You see them. You love them. You choose them. You are trustworthy. I pray that by the power of your Spirit, that you would lead each person, whether we're married or single, whether we're a grandparent or a parent or a child, that you would lead each person to know what his or her response is to the story they just heard. Maybe it's to receive your love and your grace in relationship. Maybe it's to extend forgiveness. Maybe it's to find a way to love and serve and support their spouse. Maybe it's to take a step to humble themselves and reach out for help. Maybe it's to encourage someone close to them. I don't know, God, but you know by the power of your Spirit. I pray, God, that you would bless and encourage and teach us all through this series over this next month. I thank you for all the lessons you're going to have for us, whether we're married or single. And God, I pray that you would give us courage when you prompt us to act. We trust you, Father. I pray you teach us from your word, that you teach us from one another. We pray all these things in Jesus' name, and all God's people said, amen.